Hi, this is Darcy Lowen, The Chainsaw, and you're listening to the Sixth Sense Podcast.
Welcome back to another episode of the Sixth Sense Podcast. Joined in studios right now by Graham Creech. Graham, what's up, man?
What's going on, buddy?
Not too bad.
Relax, man. Just
relax. Melnick is saying relax with his magical hat.
It's all good.
It has the properties. It soothes the whole fan base. Until Washington wins this afternoon. And Ottawa, again, is only 2 points ahead of Buffalo and Washington in the standings. So, thoughts? Right away?
It's better than being tied after... Who would have thought after getting dominated by Montreal that they'd come back and they'd still be two ahead after...
I thought
they weren't going to get any points all weekend.
No, I think a lot of people Montreal felt like game. That too. Give them credit. They came out against Pittsburgh last night, scored 8 goals. It was against Thiessen, obviously. Marc-Andre Fleury wasn't in net, so you can thank Dan Bylsma for that. Everything kind of worked out last night for Ottawa. Because Everybody was panicking for good reason.
For me, the whole thing was how they've performed against their two biggest rivals who are lottery teams.
Those are must-win games. That's
why I was pushing the panic button. And it's still, like, they have 2 points breathing room.
Yeah, those weren't the most glamorous games to watch. But, like, to Ottawa's credit, I believe they outshot Montreal and Toronto quite...
How many quality scoring chances did they have, though?
Granted, yeah, most of those shots were coming from the perimeter. But they still dominated the possession game. They should have came away with more points than they did in those games.
After that first, I don't know what, 15 minutes in Montreal, they definitely carried the play for the rest of the game. Absolutely. But they dominated Pittsburgh. That was great. So many performances to be proud of after that game. Did you watch it?
I missed the first period because I was out for a family birthday.
What was it, 2-1 after one?
I think you're right. And then I was able to, fortunate enough to catch the last two periods. So I saw most of the game.
Unreal.
Every time Pittsburgh scored a goal to come within one, Ottawa responded just like that with a goal of their own. So it's nice to see them win against such a highly accredited opponent. I think Pittsburgh hadn't lost a game in regulation. That bodes well moving forward. Hopefully that can give them a little bit of confidence. Most of the players are struggling in their offensive slumps. Daniel Alfredson being chief among them. And he came out last night with 2 goals. And it'll be interesting to see whether or not Ottawa can carry this momentum moving into Winnipeg tomorrow night.
Hostile territory in the peg where they may or may not think that they still have a chance.
Where they chant silver medal at Ryan Miller. And what was it against Ovechkin?
Crosby's
better. Yeah.
You know what I don't like? They're going to boo Alfie tomorrow.
Sign of respect. He's the captain. Boston went in there earlier in the year, and it was on CBC. And, yeah, they beat the captain. I think it's more of a sign of respect than anything else.
Nah. They're stealing. They cheered for Toronto for the last 12 years or so. So they picked that up from their Ontario rivals there. But, no, great game last night, especially if you're a Sens fan. I tell you, it was scary, though. Every time Pittsburgh got to within one goal and they'd get a power play and you'd see – Neil, Crosby, Malkin, Letang, and somebody else on the ice. Unreal. It's almost not fair.
That's a lot of firepower.
Sens weathered the storm. Anderson played well coming in relief.
Yeah, but Bishop got hurt last night. No updates yet.
No updates.
To the extent of his injury, but it's a leg injury.
Robin
Lehner was playing this afternoon. I don't think he's been recalled.
He
as
got
far
shelled
as I know.
Today. He got
yanked after 40, I think.
Yeah, after 40 minutes, 4 goals allowed.
The goaltending is interesting. They can't keep it constant. It's those three guys. It's musical chairs. Everybody's kind of moving around.
Andy looks good, though. Didn't have a chance on that goal.
Yeah, he's not as rusty. After that, you know, you watched the Montreal game. Yeah. He let in those 2 goals on the first 4 shots, and you're thinking, oh, God.
Maybe he almost needed that.
Maybe. He came back in. He played strong the rest of the way out, and then he came in relief last night, and he looked fine. So just getting him in the mindset where he's – well, we'll talk to Justin Goldman of thegoalieguild.com later about this podcast, but – he seems like the kind of guy who needs to be pushed, and he just needs that kind of constant, if I don't play well, I'm not going to play in the next game. And with a guy like Ben Bishop standing behind him in nets, you know, he has to be on at his best, and I think that bodes well for Ottawa moving forward.
Would you call up Robin Lehner then if Ben Bishop has serious injury, which
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, if it's significant. Mind you, I don't think they play again until Saturday in Philadelphia. So there's a bit of time, obviously. If Anderson's going to play the full 60 minutes, fine. If he gets pulled tomorrow night, Ault can fill in if necessary. So I don't think there's any reason why Lehner has to come up right away. But, yeah, if the injury is serious enough, I'd like to see Lehner come up.
Even if he's not going to start any games, just to have
just to be around, I'd rather have. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Agreed.
Hey, all right, if Anderson gets hurt, right, could happen. We saw it last night. Injuries happen all the time. So if Andy goes down, you need someone who can step up and play and who can be relied upon. I think Lehner could be that guy. You talked about good performances last night. Who blew you away?
Blew
who were you
away.
Impressed with?
I was impressed with a lot of guys.
Matt Carkner's 8 minutes?
Those 8 minutes were better than however many minutes you're going to give Matt Gilroy.
Not a Gilroy fan.
You could see that he has some skill there. He has the ability, but he makes poor decisions to me. He's always getting caught. You look up, he's behind the other team's net, and there's a 2-on-1 going back the other way. He just makes poor decisions with the puck.
The first thing I notice, and I've been to a number of games recently that he's been playing in, and whenever there's a turnover by the opposition in the offensive zone, Gilroy is one of the first guys to like exit the zone. He turns into forward mode. It's crazy. And he's a different cat. Like you can tell he's almost like a rover out there on the ice. And you can actually see
the offensive, but he's not putting up any numbers.
No, not at all. But you can see exactly why John Tortorella soured on that guy in New York.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, he's unpredictable. Teammates don't really know what he's going to do out there. And you can understand that.
He's not safe though. Safe is death.
That's true too.
Torts would like a little bit of that.
That's true too. But who else? Who else has stood out for you in the last couple of games?
I like Gonchar last night.
Yeah, he led the team in ice time, I believe.
And just the way on his goal, he just read that play so well. It was a great pass from Nick Foligno coming out behind
the net.
But he drove
the net.
The middle. Oh, it was beauty. Pinch right
when's
down.
The, when's the last time you could honestly say that Sergei Gonchar hit the net on the power play?
There was a couple games ago he actually did let, but you know what? He's letting some bombs go from the point that are.
Yeah.
Keep it down a little bit, Sergei. Get a tip.
Who else?
Colin Greening.
Yeah, he looked good last night. I thought Foligno actually looked.
Foligno, well, I should have started with Foligno. I thought he was the best player.
Yep.
But the best senator, I'd say.
Yep.
And I don't know if I've said this on the podcast. I'm sure I've said it to you, but I don't know why they didn't give him a chance on the second line earlier.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a huge supporter of Nick Foligno. I don't care either way.
Yeah.
But to Rob me, Clint if you're going to give Clint Hammer
it, yeah.
and
Bobby
AHL
Butler.
Players chances yeah. on the second line, why aren't you? Why like why did it take so long for Foligno to get that chance?
Maybe they just didn't like the mix on the third line when they put him up there. Because that's happened too. Like Zach Smith hasn't exactly been lighting up the score sheets of late either. I think he has like 2 goals in the last 15 games or
Let
something.
Let him bang a crash then on the third line.
Yeah, that's true too. But I mean, if those lines are getting hemmed in all the time, Foligno's a great puck possession guy. And he carries the play a lot. Last night, actually, on that Alfredson goal where he made the nice little pass, as soon as he hit the blue line and he was stick handling through guys, I'm like, oh, great, he's going to the net. And then he starts veering off into the corner. And in my head, I'm thinking, no, where are you going? And no, he found Alfredson in front of the net. And it was a nice little backhand.
Not only the points, though. I noticed every time that line was out there, I think there was a couple times in the Penguin zone where they'd get the puck like, mm-hmm. and they'd try to move it up to a forward for a breakout, and Foligno would be the first man on the puck, and he'd cause a turnover at their blue line.
Yeah.
It was just, I don't know, he was great last night. Colin Greening, I thought, if that guy had, obviously this is his first year, it's his rookie season, he's going to get better, but if that guy can work on his hands a little bit, it would be nice if he had more of a natural scoring touch, because he gets lots of chances. The Montreal game, I think Spezza set him up for like 3 chances right in the slot. And
he's kind of starting to learn, though, that I forget who brought up the point. Maybe it was Poffin, actually. And when Greening goes to the net and realizes that he might not have the skill to score like the nice goals in the league, and when he just goes to the net, jams the net, and the puck is there for him, like with his size and strength, he will get a lot of dirty goals.
Absolutely.
It's just when he learns.
He's got, what, 17?
When he learns to play with that level of urgency and that kind of awareness of how he can use his skill set to get his points, he's going to be phenomenal. It's just, I think it's just kind of like part of that maturation process, and it's just part of that learning experience that he's going to have to get over, and then hopefully he starts bringing it again every night.
Who were you impressed with last night?
Foligno, for starters. I thought the whole second line was good. Yeah. Alfrey and Turris. Spezza looked better. It's nice to see him put out some points.
I thought he was great last night.
The D. Carlson's game wasn't where I thought it would be.
A lot of people...
Maybe it's just a microscope because he's playing against like the Crosbys and Malkins where I expected him to be at a higher level. And like looking at Karkner's minutes, I think Karkner played 8 minutes last night. And you look at the way the rest of the ice time is distributed, you thought, well, okay, if this guy's barely going to play, Carlson's minutes would be well up close to 30, and they weren't. So I was a bit disappointed with him. He was hit and miss last night. He made some great plays. He screwed up a couple plays as well, but...
He definitely did, and he's fighting it right now. You can tell he's hit a little bit of a wall. I don't know if it's tired and people targeting on him.
You think it's with the offense struggling a bit that he's trying to do too much?
Yeah, I think so. You could tell a little bit with some of his turnovers. Like last night, I believe when it was still 2-1, he got the puck twice in his own end, and each time he was trying to get it to somebody for a nice breakout pass, and he coughed it up both times, two times in a row.
And then he blocked the shot. And the puck got deflected above the net. I know exactly the sequence that you're talking about.
Yeah, but I don't know. I think a lot of people were harping on his game last night. I don't think he was that bad. He's not putting up the points like he had been in the previous 25 games or whatever.
Do you think we're nitpicking because he's kind of in that Norris consideration zone? Like, you know, it's like the last stretch of games, right? So you kind of want to see him finish strong so everybody can get behind him. Because I think more people, especially within the media who will actually be voting on the award, are tuning in for these games to watch him play.
Especially the nationally televised TSN.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And you're kind of hoping that, okay, come on, national spotlight, step up your game. You can do it. It's a great platform for your Norris Trophy consideration. Just do it. And I wouldn't say he fell flat last night, but he was hit or miss. It wasn't one of his better games.
He's got to get a new batch of sticks.
Yeah, that's true, too. We were joking about that on Twitter last night.
It's not even funny. You can tell he's pissed. He threw a stick the second last one he broke. I think somebody was saying, I don't know where I heard this today, but somebody said 10 broken sticks in his last three games. I believe it. He seems to break it every time he goes for a one-timer back there. I don't know what type of flex he's using on his stick. I don't know if he's using a really low flex because he likes to walk the point. You know how he throws it on the net. So I don't know if he has a really whippy stick. I don't know if that's part of it because if you've noticed, a lot of them have been on one-time slap shots that he's been breaking them. But he's frustrated, and I would be too. It's unbelievable. But he'll bounce back, and he drives the offense. If he's not putting up points, he's still getting the puck out of the zone and getting it up to the forwards. I think people need to relax.
There you go.
Carlson.
The magical properties of Eugene Melnyk's hat. I was grilling him on Twitter today.
The Huge?
Yeah.
I didn't catch any of it. It was 67. Still.
See, I thought, had I known that Eugene Melnyk would have like magical hat, I blame him for not wearing a Stanley Cup hat during the 07 run.
Yeah, that was good.
Motivational Eugene hats. They should start selling those at the Sen store.
I wonder if he was wearing a Minnesota Wild hat this weekend, because it wasn't working. The one weekend I cheer for Danny Heatley.
Well, there's your mistake right there.
Yeah, I guess so. Awful.
He's got, what, 20 goals this year?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes me happy.
Sad part is he's probably been more useful than Martin Havlat this season.
Hey, Mach 9's on a tear right now.
Yeah, he's playing well. Since he's come back from his injury, yeah. He's playing well. So I'm thinking for this podcast episode, I'm going to try and make it longer than last night's national anthems. I don't know if it can be done.
Did you see the video of that?
Yeah, well, yeah. Yeah, after the fact, yeah. I'm glad I wasn't there.
You should have seen upstairs. It was...
You're referring to the press box?
Yeah. I've never seen a vibe like that. Everyone...
Just silly?
...was on the same page.
I'm sure you've been drinking with the fellas before. I'm sure you've seen like that glazed, smiling look before. No?
Not 2 minutes before the buzzer. It was funny. It was good. Look at the video of Carlson. He had to sit down before the Canadian anthem.
Oh, really?
There's two videos. The NHL.com doesn't do it any justice. You see him kind of just smirk. But there's another video. I don't know if someone shot it, their TV. I don't know what they were doing, but he was giggling. He was covering his face. He had to turn away from the camera like he was looking at the trainer. And then the last 10 seconds of the anthem, he was sitting on the bench. Just losing control. Who gives a shout out? Ah, we're harping on this poor girl.
No, but who cares?
Who interrupts an anthem?
It's not Kanopka's sister.
Say, you let can me take hear you.
It's not Kanopka's sister. You can take liberties.
Let me hear you during an anthem. She did a good job, though.
It was 4 minutes long.
Each anthem. I wasn't sure what to expect. There's people tweeting about it from the press box, watching her pregame warm up.
Oh, nice.
There's some good comments. So I knew something was up with the anthem. I didn't know what it was going to be, and we found out. What's with Lyndon Sulich?
From my understanding, he is taking time off. Yeah. More so than he has in years past. Obviously, he still shows up for the odd one. But no, he's booked time off, which is fine.
Yeah,
so
no,
they've been trying out new people throughout the course of the season. None of them are replacements.
No.
They're just, you know, fill-ins. Yeah. Yeah, we've had some interesting ones this year. You had the Big Sugar guitarist. You had
Kanopka's sister.
Yeah, and another opera singer, too. Fantastic. Fantastic. Anyways, one of the things that I wanted to talk to you about before we get to our guests is the possibility of Ottawa finishing ninth. They're only 2 points ahead of Washington, 2 points ahead of Buffalo. They're in seventh spot right now. Is ninth place for you the worst case scenario for this team right now, for this season?
It's a major disappointment. If you ask me ninth place, I think you asked all your followers a question on Twitter in the summer or during training camp. I don't know when it was, but I said that I thought they would finish between 8th and 11th or 12th, I think. And you were surprised with how high that I had them. I thought there were teams below them that were overrated. But either way, if they had finished 9th and you told me at the beginning of the season, I'd be happy with that effort for sure. Disappointing.
Even after all those years of making fun of the Maple Leafs for finishing the same position, even though like they were supposed to be going through their rebuild as well.
Did they ever admit to a full rebuild?
Brian Burke doesn't admit to anything.
Did they draft Tyler Seguin and Dougie Hamilton in their rebuild? No. So I would have been impressed with the season. Right now, just the way it's unfolded, it would be majorly disappointing for me anyways as a fan.
It's weird. Like, I'm kind of torn. Like, I think from maybe the standings point of view, yes, it does suck because obviously you didn't get into the playoffs. You're going to get a worse draft position. It's still a rebuild. You're still building with young kids. But at the same time, you look at some of the stories from in-season. You're looking at the success that a guy like a Colin Greening has had, the acquisition of a Kyle Turris, which kind of fits the movement going forward. And he made the team better than it could have been than it was at the start of the season. And you look at what Erik Karlsson has done this year, and you're like, you know, you pump the fist and you have more reason to get excited about this team right now. But at the same time, I'm kind of wondering, like, you have a number of Ottawa veterans who've been healthy all year. You look at the defense, you look at Phillips, Gonchar, Kuba, they've all been healthy. You look up front, McCulloch, Alfredson, Spezza, they've all been healthy. And I can't remember the last time that, like, that collective group of players has played more than, like, 69, 70 games together. It just hasn't happened. And I think that bodes well, but it kind of has me a little bit concerned because I think this team potentially could take a step back next year.
Oh, absolutely.
Depending on the success that, like, young guys who come into the lineup next year will have, guys like Silverberg or Zibanejad.
I think for sure their top six is going to be improved.
Boy, you'd hope so. You can't trot Bobby Butler out there every third, fourth
Bobby Butler's not a top six forward. He's not an NHL player right now.
He's going to make more money than Daniel Alfredson next season.
That's your favorite line, eh?
I know. How funny is that, though? It's kind of embarrassing.
Meh. I don't know. I think their defense has to be improved.
They're
going to plug some holes. Jared Callen will be better.
They still give up way too many shots per game. I think they're like third worst in the NHL for giving up shots.
Greg Anderson likes to be busy.
Sergei Gonchar, he played well last night, but I don't know. The second half, I found his plays kind of slipped a little bit. And Kuba and Karlsson have been fantastic all year. Can't complain there, but you hope Jared Cowan's going to be better.
I think he will be. But he's like starting to get a bit nasty side to him.
Yeah. And Chris Phillips has been okay, but you want to see some improvement and you want to see some better talent. Like, I don't know. After the whole Brian Lee, Matt Carkner juggle fest all season, you can include Matt Gilroy in that conversation as well. It's just, I don't know. I just want to see more talent on the blue line. And I think at this point,
they'll do that.
Do you think Sergei Gonchar is like a bottom pairing guy almost at this point in time?
Yeah, I'd say that's fair. I'd expect him to be in the 5-6 pairing next year. I'd hope that they'd improve their defense score so that him and Phillips, what's wrong with having him and Chris Phillips on your bottom pair? I like that.
It's a lot of money.
Whatever. One more year for Gonchar.
No, I know. I'm just saying.
And Phillips.
That's $9 million in salary in your bottom pair.
It's true. That's a great point.
But yeah, no, but from the big
if they're
going to
be reliable out there,
yeah.
Like they're not going to, he's not going to put up the same points he used to, but if he's going to play it safe in his own zone, Chris Phillips, I thought he's been played well this year. You can trust him out there.
I thought he played, he's been physical, more physical of late.
Jumping
more
in
assertive.
The play.
Yeah. He scored a big goal.
Yeah. Big goal last night. Fixed that power
play. He comes
play.
Through. He comes through at the most, like, awesome time.
Great celebration, too.
Yeah, I know. He's just his 1,000th game.
Yeah.
That was unbelievable. That was perhaps like my favorite game to be at this season. It was unbelievable. He took it to like the next level. And I wish he could get to that level more often.
Just to finish up what you asked, though, I think it would be disappointment. It would, like, if you sit back and look on the season, it's a good season. People have had career years and are starting to become, like, you're seeing what Carlson's becoming, possible superstar in this NHL or in this league. But just the way it's unfolded and the games they've lost down the stretch, that it would be disappointing. But I think they're going to get in there. Craig Anderson looks like he's healthy. The team's playing with, just that one win. I bet you that just changes the whole morale in that dressing room. Bet you they're loose right now. Tough that they're playing in Winnipeg tomorrow. It would be nice if they were playing anywhere else. Maybe not Toronto or more.
It's a tough barn to win in.
Plus, they're fighting for their lives. If they lose tomorrow, they're done.
Yeah.
So I'd like to see them play someone else tomorrow, but it's not possible. You can't trade off dates in the schedule.
I guess while we're hitting on Craig Anderson, maybe it's kind of at that time where we should go to our next guest. Joining us when we get back after the break will be Justin Goldman from thegoalieguild.com. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. I live down the street on the local high school. Listeners, joining us on the line right now from Vegas is thegoalieguild.com's Justin Goldman. Justin, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing well, man. Thanks for having me on.
No, thanks for coming on. We hear it's your birthday, too. So happy birthday to you. We hope it's a good one.
Yeah, thanks a lot. It's pretty exciting to be in Vegas for my birthday. And I know I'm missing some good hockey games, but this is a great way to spend my 30th. So coming on and talking with you guys is like icing on the cake, man.
Well, thanks for taking the time to come on and talk with us. So getting right to it, take us back to the NHL trade deadline. We didn't have a chance to talk to you then. What was your assessment of the Ben Bishop trade for Ottawa?
I thought it was huge. I mean, literally speaking, it was huge. He's 6'7". He takes up so much space in the net. And he's a mobile goaltender. And just knowing he's 25 years old, he's a little bit more mature than maybe a guy like a Robin Lehner or even a guy like Braden Holtby, says a lot about where he's at in his pro career. He has pretty much done everything he possibly could in the AHL. No, he doesn't have that championship trophy like Robin Lehner does, but you know, he dominated in Peoria, and he was definitely ready to take the next step. I think having that success in the All-Star game, you know, winning that shootout was just kind of the point where I think everyone realized, okay, well, the Blues had signed Brian Elliott. The writing's on the wall. If any goalie gets moved at the trade deadline, it's probably going to be Ben Bishop. And for me, just seeing it from my perspective, if any team really needed another goaltender in their depth chart, it was Ottawa. So for these two sides to kind of work this deal out, and for Ottawa to pick up a guy like Ben Bishop, I mean, not only was it perfect timing because of Craig Anderson's injury, but Ben Bishop's the type of goaltender that could have a lot of potential as an NHL goaltender.
So it seems clear that he was NHL-ready at the time of the trade. Are you surprised that other teams, such as Tampa Bay or Toronto, didn't make a move to acquire Ben Bishop?
For those two teams, I'm not surprised. I think everyone kind of sees Tampa Bay as a team that is going to do something over the summer, and it just seems like they're going to be gunning really hard for Corey Schneider. You know, they've kind of collected a few draft picks, and I think in order for them to get Schneider, they're going to have to move those picks in order to get a goaltender of his caliber. So, you know, I wasn't too surprised to see that Tampa Bay kind of passed on Ben Bishop. I think they want someone that has the NHL experience. It has a little bit more upside and maybe a little bit younger. For Toronto, I mean, they're a disaster right now with their goaltending. You can read a lot of articles. You can hear a lot of stuff about their goaltending and their future, but I just don't like it right now. I don't like the way Reimer's developed this season, and I still think Jonas Gustafsson is not the type of goaltender that's going to thrive under Francois Allaire's system. So, you know, Toronto could have definitely used a big guy like Ben Bishop, but Is he going to be the type of goaltender he can be under Francois Allaire? I just don't know if it would have worked out. So probably best that Toronto did pass on a guy like Ben Bishop.
I don't know if you read it in this morning's Edmonton Journal, but I believe it was Jim Matheson who was actually talking about Steve Yzerman and the Vancouver relationship there, and whether or not he'd be willing to parlay like a couple first-round picks or a couple second-round picks that he's accumulated at this year's trade deadline for a guy like Corey Schneider. I know last time you came on the show, we talked a lot about the volatility of the position itself, and just from an asset management perspective, it's probably the savvy move on the part of the Senators to parlay a second-round pick when teams like Tampa Bay could be throwing a couple firsts for a guy like Corey Schneider.
Yeah, it was a great deal all around. I mean, age is a big factor when you're looking at trading picks or making any type of a trade for a goaltender. If you go out and you get a 19 or a 20 or a 21-year-old, no matter how much success he's had at any level, you still don't really know what you're going to get if you're trading prospects. And to get a 25-year-old named Ben Bishop, I mean, he's got everything you want in a guy that's going to be reliable. He's got the maturity. He's got the AHL experience. He's got the size. He's fairly mobile, and that mobility and his ability to kind of control his movements as the pace and the speed around him elevates, you know, something that will continue to grow and continue to get refined over time. So I think Ottawa looked at this deal, and knowing that they only had to give up a second-round draft pick, yeah, that could turn out to be a really nice pick over the next few years, but Ben Bishop was definitely worth it. I think they needed the buffer zone in the sense that Robin Lehner is going to be a terrific goaltender in the NHL someday, but I just don't think he's mature enough yet. And one more season in the AHL to kind of make up for this season, which has definitely been a struggle, I think it was just a great move. And let's not forget, I mean, he only signed for 1 year, so it's not like they've committed to Ben Bishop long-term. They know what they have in Craig Anderson, and they know that they're going to have a terrific future stud in Robin Lehner. So I liked just about everything that this this deal for Ben Bishop kind of portrayed.
Lehner was pulled today in Binghamton's loss this afternoon. Do you think another year in the minors, especially if they don't improve that team in Binghamton, specifically the defense, do you think that'll... How do you think Lehner will respond to that? Do you think he'll threaten to go back to Sweden, or do you think his maturity has improved and he'll handle that well? Do you have any idea how he'll take that?
Well, that's the burning question, because nobody really knows how he'll react to it, and this is where that maturity really comes into play. I mean, patience is probably the most important virtue for a goaltender that has that really high potential and has that limited NHL experience but success in those limited games. And that's exactly what Robin Lehner has showed us. When he plays in the NHL, when he's got that Senators uniform on, he's so motivated, he's so alert, he's intense, he's fierce, he's going to stop every single puck as long as he sees it. But for some reason, when he's down in Binghamton, I just don't know if the focus is there. Yeah, it could be the fact that, hey, he just doesn't have that strong of a team around him. But this is where goaltenders really have to prove their work ethic and their consistency and all those different mental elements that come into play when you want to see a true, legit, 100% ready NHL goaltender. So to me, I think Robin Lehner still has to go out and prove to the organization that, you know, yes, he did win a championship his rookie season as a pro. This season, you can pretty much title it the sophomore slump in the AHL, but now he's got to come back next season and prove that, yeah, it was just a sophomore slump. He's going to overcome it. He has learned to be more consistent and a more well-rounded goaltender, and I think just more even-keeled in terms of his emotions. I mean, we've seen him get kicked out of games. We've seen him go through some suspensions. And that's not what you want when you want a starting, legit NHL goaltender. You want a real even-keeled guy, a guy who's not going to get too high and not get too low. So I think that's what Lehner still has to prove, not only to himself, but to the Ottawa Senators organization. And I think that kind of shows itself with the fact that, you know, they did go out and they did get Ben Bishop to kind of fill in that gap for one more season.
Speaking of Bishop, how would you assess his play since coming into Ottawa?
I think he was very strong his first three or four games. And, you know, his mobility in tight, when plays are developing, whether it's right below his goal line or right in that crease area, that's where he's really going to have to work hard on tracking pucks and making sure that he's really balanced and really square. And it's not an easy thing to do. I mean, the speed from the AHL to the NHL is just, I could never imagine how big of an adjustment it is, but every goalie has to make that adjustment. Some goalies make it really fast. Some goalies need, you know, a couple months, maybe even 20, 30 games. Some goalies never adjust. I do think Bishop has the ability to make that adjustment over time, but now that kind of that adrenaline rush is kind of worn off after the first four or five games, he's really going to be tested from here on out. And, I mean, the injury was really, really tough. I actually had a chance to see that game, and very unfortunate because, you know, he needed these games. He needed this opportunity to really get acclimated to the speed of the NHL. And I don't know how serious the injury is. I don't know what the latest report is. But it's definitely a big, you know, it's just a big obstacle because now he's got to get healthy again and he misses out on that opportunity to play some more NHL games. So I would say I was pleasantly surprised with his first three or four games. And then, you know, maybe the two games leading up to the injury, I was starting to, you know, see some things that he needs to polish over the summer. But now it's just a matter of getting healthy and making sure he's 100%, you know, whenever he has a chance to get back in the lineup.
Yeah. So, like you, we don't really know the status of Ben Bishop's leg right now. We're kind of assuming that Robin Lehner will probably get recalled. But
right.
Assuming, let's just look ahead for tomorrow night. Let's say Lehner gets into a game in the next week as a recall, and he plays well. Obviously, when he first came up to fill in for Craig Anderson, when Anderson cut his hand, he played really well. If you're Brian Murray and you have two young, viable backup goaltenders who seem like they can hold down the fort, would that be a situation or scenario in which you'd kind of be interested in pursuing that a little bit because we've seen that Lehner is so motivated at the NHL level?
Yeah, I think at this point in time, Ottawa needs to win games, right? So I don't think you care too much about the long-term future. I think you put in your best goaltender or the goaltender that's going to give you the best chance to win. And I have to say, like, when Craig Anderson came off the bench after Bishop got injured, I think that was the best thing for him because when you come off the bench like that, it sparks you to play your best. You have to be attentive because you don't have any time to think about what's going on. Next thing you know, Anderson's in the game. He's facing a power play from the Pittsburgh Penguins. So that's a difficult situation to be thrown into, but he makes a couple of saves, and he looked fierce. He looked aggressive, and he stopped, I think it was 19 of 20 shots. So coming off the bench like that, even though you hate seeing Bishop go down with an injury, I think it actually sparked Craig Anderson, and I could see him getting hot over the next three or four games. And having that competition, having him being pushed by Robin Lehner, another guy who's very fierce and you know, real aggressive and wants to play every single minute, wants to stop every single shot, I think it's going to be a good situation for Ottawa, and you just play the goaltender that wins you hockey games, and you roll with that, even if it has to go into the playoffs that way. I mean, it could be a Robin Lehner. I don't know how this is going to work out over the last 2 weeks of the regular season, but whichever goaltender is stopping those pucks and getting you points, that's who you roll with.
Yeah, Anderson played great last night. The goal that he did let in, nobody was stopping. His beautiful pass from Ashton behind the net. If you were Brian Murray, would you move Craig Anderson moving forward if you could and go with a Bishop-Lehner tandem next year?
That's a tough question. I mean, I don't think Ben Bishop is ready to be a full-fledged starting goaltender. He's still getting acclimated to the game, to the speed of the NHL. And now that this injury has kind of, you know, reared its ugly head, so to speak, I don't know how he's going to play coming back. I mean, I don't know how serious the injury is, so it's all kind of unknown. Craig Anderson's healthy again, and like I said, you know, 19 of 20 shots, or stopping 19 of 20 shots was a great great little game for him against the Penguins. And you roll with Craig Anderson. He's your starting goaltender. He knows how to handle a really heavy workload. Again, he's a fierce dude in the net. And when you have that ferocity, that's an element that not many goaltenders have at the NHL level, especially when you're looking at starting workhorses. So I would love to see a Craig Anderson slash Ben Bishop tandem for next season. And Craig Anderson needs someone that's going to push him on a daily basis. You saw how it kind of worked with Alex Auld as a backup. Auld just simply couldn't push Craig Anderson enough in practices. He couldn't really earn a lot of starts. And what I noticed this season is that Craig Anderson is the type of goaltender that's really streaky. When he wins 2-3 games in a row, he'll win 7 or 8. But if he has a couple of bad games and the Senators cannot slip to a reliable backup, you're forced to play Craig Anderson when he's not necessarily motivated or he's not necessarily playing with that fierce edge, and he usually ends up losing 5 or 6 games. So with Ben Bishop as Craig Anderson's backup, now Anderson's really being pushed on a daily basis, every single practice. He can't take a day off, because if he does and he loses 2 or 3 games in a row, Brian Murray and the coaches there at Ottawa are not going to have a problem flipping over to Ben Bishop and giving him an opportunity to roll, you know, 4 or 5 wins in a row. So I love the idea of a Craig Anderson-Ben Bishop tandem for next season. There's no rush with Robin Lehner, you know. Like, he's a great young goaltender, but let's not forget, I mean, he came straight over from Sweden, played 1 year juniors, played 1 year in the AHL, and now he's struggling in that sophomore season. So I still think, even though he's played really, really well in a Sens uniform, he still has a lot to prove. He still has a lot to learn about being a professional goaltender, especially at the NHL level. So that's kind of how I assess the situation moving forward.
Absolutely, and I think everyone would agree with you that Craig Anderson needs somebody capable of pushing him. No offense to Alex Auld. He's a foot soldier, but he's not going to get that job done.
I mean, it's funny because Alex Auld, I mean, he's such a journeyman, and he makes a great veteran backup, but I don't think he's the type of backup that fits well with Craig Anderson. And, you know, we've talked about Craig Anderson before, right? That was the big topic back in the preseason, and I know his game pretty well just from his time spent here in Colorado, and he needs someone pushing him. And if you think you like Craig Anderson now, imagine what it's like when he's forced to play at his best every single day in practice and every single game.
Yeah, well said. So you've spoiled us in talking Sens. Is there any goalie anywhere out there that you're super pumped for?
Oh, okay, great question. Super pumped. Jacob Markstrom is probably the biggest. He's by far the best prospect, so I'm super pumped for him because I really think, like, as good as Jose Theodore's been this season, Jacob Markstrom's probably going to steal that job from him at some point next season. The knee injuries kind of scare me a little bit, but I don't think it's serious to the point where, you know, his long-term career as an NHL goaltender is in jeopardy. But we've seen a lot of really good rookies this season. I mean, Matt Hackett has been very impressive. Not a big dude, but he moves like liquid water on the ice. He's really fun to watch. Braden Holtby is another bright young star that I think you're going to see in the NHL full-time next season. But you know how I am. Like, I go really deep when it comes to prospects. And this guy's, like, totally off the charts. Nobody's heard of him. He hasn't been drafted yet. But I'm going to drop his name just for your listeners to kind of look him up and look his – he's got a video on YouTube. And his name is Thomas Narmo, N-A-R-M-O. He's like 6'9", and he's Norwegian, and he's 16 years old. And I think this guy is draft eligible in 2013, but go look him up on YouTube. You'll see a video of him. The dude is a towering inferno of a beast, and he's someone who I'm going to be watching really closely over the next couple of years because nobody's heard of him right now, but I guarantee you're going to hear his name in probably a year or two, and he'll be probably drafted pretty high in 2013.
Where's he going to play?
All I know is that he plays in Norway. Like, it's so hard to find information on some of these really deep prospects because, you know, not a lot of scouts are following goaltenders in Norway. But all I know is that he plays in Norway, and he's huge, and I've seen video of him, and he actually moves really well for his size. So, you know, you talk about the Ben Bishops and the Jason Misans, that are 6'7", 6'8". Jacob Markstrom's up there. Anders Lindback. This Thomas Narmo guy. I mean, I've never seen him play a real game, but just from the video I've seen and stuff I've heard about him, he's a guy that I think we're going to hear about in 2 or 3 more years.
Unreal. I'm looking forward to seeing this video. I'll have to watch it as soon as
we
get off the air.
Yeah, look it up. I guarantee you. Yeah, you'll be impressed.
Last question for you before we let you go. Ottawa right now is kind of sitting in the 7th position. It's looking like Ottawa could play Boston in the first round of the playoffs. I know everybody's been kind of looking at the Tim Thomas situation and the number of games that he's been playing. Obviously, Marty Turco's come in. What's your assessment of Thomas in the second half of the season?
I think he's been purely distracted by everything that happened with the White House ordeal. And the goaltender's mindset is such a fragile thing. I mean, you're trying to balance so many different elements of being able to play in the moment. And playing in the moment is what it's all about. When you're strictly focused on just stopping that puck and nothing else in your life is distracting you, that's how you are able to play at your best. Ryan Miller is a really good example of this. He was distracted all the way up to the All-Star break. As soon as the All-Star break hit, he got away from it all for like 1 or 2 days, came back, and he's been a completely different goaltender. The opposite has happened for Tim Thomas. He was great. You know, he was matching last season's totals. I couldn't believe that he was doing it 2 years in a row. But as soon as that White House ordeal went down, his whole game changed. He wasn't the same guy. He didn't have that same intensity. He didn't have that same ferocity. He wasn't his super acrobatic self. Maybe over the last 3 or 4 games, I've noticed he started to slowly bring it back into his game. And ironically, it's the new set of leg pads that kind of seemed to have sparked his game a little bit more. But I wasn't too impressed with how things went down with the White House ordeal. You know, just putting stuff on Facebook, he has every right to do those type of things. But it's a distraction whether you expect it to be or not. There's just some things you can't overcome as a goaltender because you have to focus so hard on stopping pucks and being ready in every single practice and every single game. And I think you look at the numbers since that whole White House ordeal, it's pretty obvious that he just wasn't the same goaltender. And maybe you don't put all of the blame on what happened with the whole White House thing, but to me, just how I see it, this is my own personal opinion, it was a huge distraction. And you just kind of hope, if you're a Bruins fan at least, you know, that he overcomes it and he's just ready to go when the playoffs begin. But clearly he hasn't been the same goaltender ever since that whole thing happened.
And as a Senators fan, we hope he doesn't figure it out. Justin, enjoy your birthday. We hope you have a great time tonight in Las Vegas. And hopefully we'll get a chance to talk to you soon.
Yeah, anytime. I really appreciate it because it's always fun when I get a chance to talk to you guys. So thanks for the birthday wishes. Thanks for having me on at any time.
Awesome. Thanks a lot, man.
All right, thanks.
Cheers.
All right, welcome back. That was an unbelievable interview. Nice job lining that up on his birthday in Vegas.
Yeah, no, he came through. He's clutch.
Not sure I
he's
could clutch. Say the same
he's
thing.
A good interview, too. He's very charismatic.
Unbelievable.
And,
I knew
he's very passionate about his goaltending.
Right away, we were talking to him, I believe it was off air. Don't think we were recording yet, but he was talking about the Washington game. Asked us who the tenders were in that. And they were ended up being Holtby and Hackett. And he was actually pissed off that he wasn't able to watch that game because he's in Vegas on his birthday because he wanted to see those two young goalies go at it. So I was pumped up right away for that interview. That was good stuff.
You know he takes it very seriously when he wants to watch Matt Hackett versus Braden Holtby.
Oh, you got to love guys like that.
No, it was a good interview. Yeah, I know. I was really interested to hear his take on how he would kind of envision Ottawa's goaltending situation panning itself out. One of the things that we didn't really get to is like the way, if Ben Bishop plays the way that scouts and Brian Murray feel like he can play, he's probably going to return more value than a second round pick by the time that Ottawa decides to either get rid of him or a guy like Craig Anderson. They gave up a second round pick. Is it a good draft year? We won't really be able to evaluate that until like 5 years from now, probably. So you get a guy who can play now, fills a need. I'm okay with it. I was a little bit apprehensive at the time of the deal because I thought that pick could have been moved for maybe something that was a bit more pressing, like another defenseman or something. But
I don't think they were going to get us a quality defenseman for a second-round pick.
No, it would have been a rental or something anyways. But that's a need that could have been addressed in the offseason. Who knows how the summer's going to play itself out. So
I'm sure they'll at least get a second-rounder for him.
So with the way the Ben Bishop's played, I've had time to kind of – look at the whole big picture, and it makes sense, and I'm happy with it. So
exciting for next year too, assuming he's going to be the number two.
Yeah, assuming Lehner has his head on straight and he goes back to Binghamton, potentially, depending on what happens. I'm assuming everything will stand as it is, and if he gets another season in Binghamton and he plays well and he embraces it, who knows, like he's only one injury away from being in the NHL full-time. So
one winky face.
Yeah, he's one winky face, and we'll have more of that heading into next year. But no, it seems like everybody's – it just seems like the teams could just kind of tight and everything's coming together slowly. It just seems very positive, at least the vibes that I'm getting.
It's happy time right now. The weather, playoffs, I'm pumped up.
I can tell.
Actually, speaking of the vibe, I'm sure Winnipeg's probably a pretty good vibe right now.
You think so?
I bet you it's nervous, but so we'll go check out Winnipeg after this.
Yes. Joining us after the break will be James Gordon, the new sports editor for the Ottawa Citizen. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. Listeners, we're joined right now on the line by the Ottawa Citizen's new sports editor, James Gordon. Welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm great, guys. How are you?
Doing well, thanks. Congratulations on your promotion. Well deserved.
Thank you. Thanks.
So you're in Winnipeg, correct?
That's right. Sens and Jets Monday night.
Have you picked up on any vibes in Winnipeg? Is the playoff vibe still there? Do people still think they're actually going to get in?
You know what? A lot of Winnipeggers like me never gave up on the Jets coming back, so they don't let go of things too easily. But I think probably a lot of fans would have given up on the Jets catching the Senators after Saturday night. But you know what? They have their eye on Buffalo and on Washington still, and I think anyone who looks at the standings and just the sort of how tough it is to make up ground in this, all these three-point games. You know, it's a long shot now, and every game is a must-win. But, I think they still believe there's a shot here.
And speaking of vibes, how's the vibe around the Senators, especially after last night's win?
Well, I think obviously it's lifted a lot of worry around the team. And you saw, I don't know if you saw, but Eugene Melnyk showed up at his Skate for Kids the other day with a hat that said relax in all block letters. So I think probably a lot of people relaxed after they picked up that win. I don't think a lot of people expected them to beat Pittsburgh, especially not like that. But, boy, it sure says something about Pittsburgh's goaltending depth that that's their number three. You know what? Like a team like Ottawa that's having trouble, sometimes you need a break to go your way like that, and you catch a backup goalie on a bad night, and suddenly you're feeling good about yourself again. So, that's how it works, and they'll hopefully, for them, carry the momentum through the next game here in Winnipeg.
Over the past few days, one of the things I picked up on Twitter, I believe it was, I can't even remember who it was, but they were talking about the pressures that the media puts on the players to win, especially in Canadian cities.
Right.
And you were one of the most outspoken ones who was saying, you know what, that's BS. So yeah. What do you feel about this whole media pressure? I personally feel like it's fabricated.
I think it is too. And you know what? It started with Scott MacArthur, who used to do the Senators post-game show here, and he made a comment about about how it was an excuse in Toronto, and I felt it was the same deal here. And actually, it was Ian Mendez who disagreed with me and said that he does think it's a factor, and that, you know, since the sort of the heat's been turned up with the internet and everything, that a lot of Canadian teams do feel that pressure a lot more. And I mean, for me, it's an excuse because, you know, you look at all the pressure that, say, an NFL team is under, or even NCAA teams in the States. You know, these are just kids. They're not even playing for money, and they're under even greater scrutiny than these millionaire hockey players. So to me, it's a cop-out a little bit to blame the media, and it's more players having to deal with what's in their own heads. I mean, if you really want to tune out the media, you can. Don't read the newspaper. But a lot of people say they do that, and they don't do it. So, you know, a team is responsible for its own actions, and if you're a really elite team that's proven to have success over long term, you know, you do learn to tune that out, and you concentrate on your own team and try and shut out those internal distractions, or, you know, you read them with just a light attitude and say, look, we know what we have to do here to win, and that's what we're going to do. So to me, it's a little bit of a cop-out. It's a bit of an excuse, and you know, that's just my opinion. Some people disagree with me. But, you know, you look at the media, say, in Montreal compared to Ottawa even, and, you know, they had people there bursting into Saku Koivu's hospital room to take pictures of his eye. Like, Ottawa, to me, is so low on the media concentration totem that I just can't agree with it here. And on a larger level, I think it's just an excuse for a team if it kind of falls to the pressure. That's them in their own heads rather than, you know, anything we're doing.
And this is a bit of a carte blanche season, right? Like, it's a rebuilding year. It's a retooling year. No expectations. So you can't come back after the fact and pin this on the media. Like,
well, and that's just it. I mean, this team, even if they don't make the playoffs, I think there would be a lot of disappointed people here. But at the end of the day, I mean, people weren't expecting them to be anywhere near the playoff race at this point in the season. So, I mean, you're right. It is kind of like hindsight's 2020, and all of a sudden it's, you know, the media pressure or whatever. But, you know, expectations were low, and even if the Senators finished, you know, ninth, it's still ahead of where they were supposed to be. So, yeah, I mean, you make a good point. To me, it's just no one expected anything out of this team, and they've surprised a lot of people, and, you know, it is what it is.
All right, what was your impression with the Melnick interview?
It was actually really insightful. I've actually had a chance to talk to Eugene Melnick before, back in 08, I think it was. I went down to Barbados and actually got to sit down with him for a while. And, you know, I'm well aware that Eugene Melnick says some wacky stuff, you know, on hockey in Canada, and when it's a quick interview and he's not prepared for it, you know, you hear some stuff that might raise eyebrows or whatever. And there were a couple things when I talked to him too, but, you know, for the most part, it was a good interview and, you know, eye-opening on some levels, just about how much has changed with this team, not only on the ice, but off the ice too, and with its attitude going forward.
One of the kind of the overtones that I picked up from just reading his responses was just, it seems like it's kind of been like a sobering process for him as the Senators owners were, and he's kind of been like matured in the sense that obviously the team's lost money being a cap team over the past few years, and they've lost a lot of games, and it's painful to watch an expensive team lose games. And just off the vibes that I've got, it seems like he's now understanding that, you know what, if you spend the most money, it doesn't always guarantee the best results.
And, I mean, that's, like, for him, it's funny seeing people react to it because, you know, everyone's like, oh, you know, the billionaire owner won't spend a cap anymore, whatever. But I don't think Eugene Melnick's close to a billionaire anymore. And, it, you know, as rich as you are, it still hurts to lose millions and millions of dollars every year. So, you know, from that perspective, I can understand where he's coming from. But you're right from a different perspective, and that's what, you know, everybody who sees a team like Ottawa try and spend its way into contention like they did before they really hit rock bottom last season and started to turn things around, is that in a lot of ways doesn't work. And it's something that you're seeing with Toronto every year too. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, Brian Burke, when he first started out, said, well, I don't believe in a three-year rebuild. Well, they're in year four and they're, again, not going to make the playoffs. And what was the last time they were in the playoffs? Like 04?
Yeah, 2004.
So, you know, it's eye-opening in one way, and in another way, it's survival. I mean, it's at the end of the day, it's a small market team, and you do get a big bump if your team goes to the Stanley Cup final and everything, but it's real money. It's real money at the end of the day. So even if you have a lot and you lose a lot, you still feel it, I think. I don't know. I'm not that rich, but that's what I would assume.
Yesterday, Melnick pointed out the fact that there's a few teams that are in a constant rebuild. Have you ever asked him, or has he ever indicated anything about potentially going backwards next year, whereas this year is such a surprise, even if they fail to make the playoffs, because they were supposed to finish so low, that if they do finish anywhere between the 7th and 9th seed, what he's expecting from the team moving forward?
Well, it seems to be kind of a stay the course kind of thing with them. I mean, they're going to keep building through the draft and not going out and making these big summer signings that wind up haunting teams. And I think it's just going to be stay the course no matter where they finish at the end of the season. And I mean, you guys follow this team pretty closely. There's some really, really good prospects coming up, and some players already in the NHL who you would think are going to improve every year, like, Jared Cowan and Erik Karlsson. And, I think we're still yet to see some real top-end young offensive talent, but you never know what Silverberg is going to do next year. And they're set up for the next little while. I think Erik Karlsson's going to kind of test this, low-budget theory when he gets his big payday this summer. But for the most part, it's going to be a keep building the slow way. And you know what? I give a lot of credit to Ottawa fans for that because, there was almost pressure to go that route. You know, you would have Eugene Melnick on one side who says, you know, we want to make the playoffs every year and let's do some patch job here. And I think a lot of fans, when they saw that might sneak you into the playoffs at the end, it's not really going to get you anywhere that you want to be. And I think fans really got behind a rebuild idea and saw some of the success that teams like Pittsburgh was having, and just teams that took the slow road and become kind of this elite year after year. So I think you need the fans behind you if you're going to take that route. And you would think they were cognizant of that when they started.
Were you a bit surprised to hear him talk about how, in terms of the organization making profits, they no longer have to go to the second round of the playoffs to break even?
Was I surprised?
Yeah.
A little, because it's kind of it was the line that they were parroting every year after the season. And on the one hand, I was surprised to hear him say it. On the other, I wasn't surprised that it's happening. I mean, when you chop that much money off your payroll, then you would hope that you would make money, because if you're a 50 million team and then you're breaking even and then you become a 64 million team not making the playoffs, then you are going to realize some more profits there. And I was a little surprised that he said it, but I wasn't surprised that it was actually happening.
Well, that's a good point too. Do you think that at some point, though, Melnick kind of has to realize that the guys on the current roster, it's going to be a cycle, right, James? Like, you have your current core that's young right now, but obviously guys like Karlsson, who you mentioned, Cowan, those guys are going to have to be retained at a higher price. Do you kind of see him as the owner who kind of went through that whole cycle with the 2007 Stanley Cup Finals team, and they're going to have to pick their spots? Do you think he's learned the lessons, the hard lessons that he's had to endure over the past couple of years?
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, and unless you're talking about these kind of rare franchises like Detroit that's going to just win every year, almost every franchise goes through cycles and they hit the highs and then they hit a low after all their best players leave or retire, and then you start fresh. And you're not looking for trade deadline pickups or anything. You have to start over at some point. And that's the point Ottawa hit, and some good moves by the franchise kind of sped that rebuild up a little bit. But I think if you're a fan or a team owner or whatever, and you're a realist, you say, teams like Detroit win every year. Not everybody can do that. That's ultimately our goal. But, you have to accept that sometimes you're going to have a down cycle and rebuild, because the only way you get really great players in the draft, unless you have the most incredible scouting service in the league, is you do really poorly and you get the best players at the top.
Did you find it funny when Eugene was comparing going into Philadelphia, New Jersey, as he said he'd rather be in Kandahar?
Yeah, that was the eyebrow raising I was talking about before. But you know what? People in Ottawa know what Eugene Melnyk's sense of humor is, and occasionally you're going to hear those lines and you kind of go, oh, I don't know if I would have said that. But that was definitely a classic Melnyk moment.
Are you surprised that he's afraid to play Philadelphia or New Jersey in the playoffs? I hope you busted him on that a little bit.
Again, I if I'm a team owner, I'm not giving bulletin board material either way. But I don't know. I wouldn't say it. But I'm not going to tell other people what to say either.
we're just sitting here laughing, just reading through your interview with him. It's just it's too much at times. But yeah. So Creech and I were talking a little bit before the playoffs or before the podcast started, and we kind of looked at Ottawa's situation. Washington picked up another 2 points this afternoon. Ottawa's not in a position where they can take the foot off the gas pedal. What's your assessment of the team's season thus far, getting to this point, and how the expectations have kind of changed from the outset to now?
Can I tell you in 2 weeks?
Yeah, that's true too.
I mean, the season's going to be assessed on the last week and a half, and it's funny that I talked to Melnyk again around this time, because the last time I talked to him was when they had that really great start with Heatley and Spezza and coming off the Stanley Cup final run, and then you thought, oh, this is going to be the easiest President's Trophy season ever, and then just completely fell off a cliff in the second half and then wound up having to really push at the end even to get in. So I think even with the sort of bump they've recently had, not a lot of teams could lose their number one goalie in the stretch run and kind of weather that storm. And, you know, you saw some good games from Robin Lehner, some good games from Bishop. And as a whole, I mean, they've survived. So you would think with Anderson back, if he can get back to playing the way he was before he got hurt, then they should be okay. But, you know, you still have to play the games, and they have a tough game against the Jets at home. It's one of the toughest home rinks, and games against Philly and New Jersey and Boston left. But they have a couple. They have a couple they should win too. I mean, they've got the Islanders still. They've got Carolina still. And one of the most important things is holding that tiebreaker against Buffalo too.
Has there been an injury update on Ben Bishop? And if so, has Robin Lehner been called?
The team didn't skate today, and if there has been, and I'm covering the team, so I should know, but if there has been an update on Bishop, I haven't heard it. I assume that will come tomorrow. But I've seen a couple comments about Robin Lehner coming up, and to be honest, I don't see why they would do that. I mean, Craig Anderson is going to start every game now. They need to get him ready for the playoffs. He's healthy. He's had a month off, so I think they'll ride him the rest of the way. And if you're going to do that, why would you bring Robin Lehner up when he can play games in Binghamton and Alex Alb can sit on the bench? I mean, you don't need to bring Robin Lehner here to sit on the bench.
That's a good point, too. But you might need him to come in relief, right?
Yeah, I guess. But, I mean, if he's coming in relief, then it's probably a lost game anyway.
I just don't want to see Alex Alb again.
I'm a little bit biased.
I noticed on senatorsextra.com, the poll that you were running on the right-hand side of the column asked readers, if Ottawa finished in ninth place, is that the worst case scenario? Or how did you word it?
I worded it, if the Senators finished in ninth, would you still consider it a successful season? Because I think a lot of people, if you said it in training camp, oh, they'll finish ninth, everyone would be like, oh, really? Like, that's pretty good. But again, it's what we go back to you were saying before. You know, perspectives change a little as the season goes on, and all of a sudden, if they miss the playoffs, it's a huge letdown, whereas before, you'd say, oh, ninth, that's way ahead of schedule. So, and I'm assuming that, I haven't looked at those numbers in the last day or two, but I'm assuming a lot of people would consider it a lost season, just because, again, people have come to expect playoffs now because, what, a week ago, they were in second place, so.
Yeah, from that perspective, missing out on the playoffs would be disastrous in the sense that, A, you're getting a worse deteriorating draft pick. B, we had expectations. Everybody was starting to fill in their their playoff brackets and say, oh, well, maybe we won't have to play Boston in the first round. And
Or maybe we'll get home ice. Who knows?
Yeah, no, that's true, too.
Just how it's unfolded with the losses to Toronto and Montreal also.
Yeah, and I mean, it's been a weird week for that. I mean, I don't know how many people would have seen that coming. But, again, it's if you're a team like them, you want to at least have your destiny in your own hands, and they still have that. So if they can win on Monday and then they have a week to kind of scoreboard watch, you know, that they're probably in okay shape, and then, you know, a couple soft opponents down the stretch. So you'd probably think three wins would do it at this point, and maybe two.
James, last question for you before we let you go. I've noticed over the past couple of days, I haven't noticed it in person personally going to a Leafs game, but it seems like a number of Senators fans are concerned about the security at Leafs games. Is that a huge pressing issue, or am I just out of the loop?
Well, you know what? It's interesting because I wouldn't have thought so, but of all the sort of stories and everything we've had on Senators Extra, and like the comments section just went like completely nuts after that game where the Leafs won 5-0 and there's fights in the stands and 70% of the crowd was supporting the Leafs. And, you know, from accounts that I had heard, it was 70% that were pro Leafs, and it got rowdy and all that. And I thought, oh, okay, whatever, it's Battle of Ontario. But then like our site just lit up after that with people saying it was terrible. They need to do more to get drunks out of here. And so I guess it's a bigger issue than I thought. And then, I mean, I spoke to Melnick about that when I was talking to him, and he was telling me that they have actually beefed up security quite a bit since that game because, you know, it apparently was a big concern to people. And then the more I thought about it, it's funny how your perspectives change because, like, I had a kid 2 years ago, and back in the day I would have been like, oh, this is so crappy, you know, it's a mausoleum in here, you know, shouldn't hockey rinks have a lot of atmosphere? But at the same time, like, if you do have a kid or something, then your perspective changes and you go to the rink, and do you really want some drunken yahoo like swearing for 20 straight minutes at the ref when your little kid's there? So it's really a weird situation, and everyone feels differently about it. And I think that's probably why a lot of the debate picked up on that, because a lot of people have widely divergent opinions on how it should be.
All right, James. Well, thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule to come on the show. We appreciated having you. Hopefully you enjoy your time at home, back at home in Winnipeg, and enjoy the game tomorrow night. It's a big one.
Yeah, always a pleasure, guys.
All right, take care, James.
So James Gordon had a bit of an interesting point. Now that the NHL is back in Winnipeg, they're not inclined to count themselves out ever.
So that tomorrow, was great.
So tomorrow night sets itself up to be a pretty eventful game because Ottawa needs the points. They can't take their foot off the gas pedal. Are you nervous at all heading into tomorrow, or do you think the team can carry momentum off the Pittsburgh game on Saturday night?
I think they can carry the momentum, but I am nervous until they get a nice cushion. Like, I'm not set until they've either locked it down or they have a 4 or 6 point lead over whoever's in ninth. Luckily, Washington and Buffalo play each other this week, I believe. Maybe tomorrow.
It might be Tuesday, actually.
Yeah, maybe.
I think it might be Tuesday night.
It's early this week, anyways.
Actually, I have the schedules here, the remaining schedules, anyways. So Buffalo plays Washington, and then they play Pittsburgh. Then they're in Toronto. Then they play Toronto again. And then they're in Philly and Boston. That's
a tough schedule.
That's a tough schedule. You look at Washington. They play Minnesota today. Obviously, they won. They play Buffalo on Tuesday. Then they play Boston, Montreal, Tampa Bay, Florida, New York.
I don't think
softer.
As tough.
It's softer.
But they've had problems with Montreal.
And then Ottawa plays Winnipeg, Philadelphia, the Islanders, Carolina, Boston, New Jersey.
You'd think that they'd be able to pick up points against the Islanders, Hurricanes, and Devils.
Ottawa plays three teams that are out of the playoffs. There's no excuse for not getting it done.
There's not. I'd be majorly disappointed.
Ball's in their hands.
But you got to just relax.
it's all in Ottawa's hands. I think it's exactly the way that, you know, if you're on this team, you wouldn't want it any other way. You don't want to have to count on Buffalo or Washington drop games.
You don't want to go into the playoffs losing anyways.
No. So there's an opportunity for Ottawa to get on a bit of a roll. They don't have to play a Montreal or Toronto again, so that bodes well. I don't think you've stopped shaking your head since we entered the studios. Anytime you like mention one of those two teams, it's just no.
I told Luke that Montreal would win 5-1. I told you 3-1.
You bastard. I went against it. I figured they'd win. I figured they'd split on the weekend. And I just, you know.
Wrong split.
Yeah, I guess wrong.
I never gamble against them. I never bet against them. If I don't like their odds, I won't bet against them. But he asked me, what do you think? And I just had a feeling going into that it wasn't going to be pretty. They've shit the bed against Montreal and Toronto all year. But, hey, they're doing it against Pittsburgh. That's a huge win.
It's a weird team because they kind of step their game up against better opponents.
No expectations.
Then, yeah, they kind of drop against
bad
opponents.
That's why I didn't want the Northeast crown when everyone's like, oh, let's get second place. No. Finish 7th, 8th, no expectations. They lose in the first round, big deal.
Yeah, it'd kind of suck. I wouldn't say big deal.
They're supposed to finish 15th, according to the experts.
According to the experts, yes. But now that they're in, you want them to win.
Oh, absolutely.
But yeah, you know what? There's a lot of parity in the Eastern Conference, though. Like, if you look at those teams like New York, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, Boston, like, there's not a team that's I don't think you're 100% comfortable against any of those teams.
Oh, no. But playing them as a 7th or 8th seed, there's no expectation on them. They can play loose. They might win a series. Just like the year they went to the Cup Finals.
I'm more excited about the possibility of not having to play Pittsburgh until round 3 than I am about anything else. Because obviously you have to beat good teams to advance. It's just, I want to kind of postpone Pittsburgh for as long as you can. Make your money, make your hay, and then get out. I'd be comfortable with that. I could see Ottawa being a surprise team. They have the talent. They have If they get hot, they're a very streaky team like you mentioned. So I think they have the ability to get it done for at least a round. And yeah, if it's an advantageous matchup, why not?
Oh, for sure. It gives the guys some experience too, those young guys. And who doesn't want to see that building going crazy? You don't see it all year. It's pretty quiet during the regular season, but it's unreal in the playoffs, and I'm pumped.
Last question for you before we get out of here.
Cool.
Because my voice is going and I need a drink.
You mean your girlfriend texted you?
Shut up.
He's thirsty.
Erik Karlsson. I've noticed ever since that Rangers game that we were at, he's been getting hammered.
Yeah.
More often than not now. And I noticed it against, who was it? I forget who laid the hit. But Chris Neal jumped in immediately. It was against Montreal.
He was not overly physical all the time.
And he hit him far enough away from the boards, and then Neal just went in right away. That's a team that's not in the playoffs. I know it's not what you want to see. But, like, everybody's doing it. Non-playoff teams are doing it. It's going to become the thing to do in the playoffs.
He'll work through it.
Can your stomach take it, though? Are you worried?
No.
No?
He's too skilled.
That a boy.
You see when he gets in battles in he's always coming out with the puck.
Yeah, no, he's very good with his positioning and his angling and his stick is active as hell. He's perhaps one of the few defensemen who I've seen in the last season to break up a 3-on-1. Did you notice that the other time? Oh, man. Yeah, no, he's terrible. He's terrible. Anyways, dude, thanks again for coming in for recording.
Anytime.
We have to get back in here again in the next week. But
no home games this week. So
that's true. We can get in.
Let's just do it.
We can get some people in as well. And yeah, thank you to the listeners for checking us out. And thank you again to Justin Goldman on his birthday. Happy birthday once again. And to James Gordon. We're out.